because I love you, you will never find someone who cares more about you than I do. That is true. That is true. Now, that mom that we just saw, she scares me. She scares me because she reminds us of the possibility that we can become that anxious about our children, that we will do their homework for them, as if somehow we are of the belief that we're going to be around forever. And that's kind of scary. Is there anything you want to say about the helicopter mom?
Yes. being a teacher, being a teacher, it's quite interesting how we can look at that and say, oh, no, that's not me. But I want every mom and dad to just sit in for a moment and think, when your child gets home and they say, can you believe it? My teacher did this and this. How quick are you to get on your BlackBerry or on your iPhone or whatever it is that you use and send a message to the teacher? How quick are you to write a little note to the teacher that so-and-so were fighting with your child and you feel like they're being bullied at school and you don't know the whole story? How tempting is it for us to do the projects? You know, these days a lot less projects are coming home because parents have been doing projects for so many years. And we get upset when our results are a B instead of an A that we think we deserve, because we know how much time we've put into that project. You know, you sat up last night cutting out every little picture that went into it. You know, and it's easy to look at her, and we might not be everything like her. But think of yourself, how much are you actually like that helicopter mom? At times.
I remember my mom doing a bird project for me in primary school, and we got 75%. She was ticked. She was ticked. I was like, Mom, thank you so much for doing. But I still, to this day, am a lousy project doer because Mom did it all. It's just terrible. Now, Luke 2:41, we're not going to turn there. You remember what we talked about last midweek? We talked about that we want to see our children and our parents grow in obedience and wisdom and stature and favor. The same applies to school. That kingdom children at school should be children that are growing in obedience, wisdom, stature, and favor. Matthew 5, verse 16. In the same way it says, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Here's a question. And don't put up your hands. I just want you to think about it. How many of you have converted teachers from your children's school? Let me tell you why that's an important question. Because is that not one of the reasons why you're a great parent at that school? Because you want to see teachers saved for Jesus? Isn't that one of the reasons why you try to be the best parent you can to your child so that the light of your family, through your awesome teen, shines brightly in the classroom and the parents say, and the teacher says, there's something different about this family? That's very important. Paul and I are reading the same book at the moment, and it's called Hell is, what's it called, Paulie? Hell is Real, but I don't want to admit it. It's a flat, depressing book to read. I got to take two of my tablets just to read it. Go for an extra run. But I tell you what, it has been so convicting, just realizing in many ways how easy it is to become apologetic about hell. We're like, well, I'm really sorry God was in a bad mood in the Old Testament, created hell. Well, the fact is it's still there, and people are going to go there if they're not baptized disciples of Jesus Christ, including the teachers at the school. And we need to let our light shine. That's where we need to be.
I think the point that stands out to me is that it says, see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You know, it's not an invitation. It's not saying, please come to church with me. Please come to Bible talk with me. But it's actually the good deeds that you do at school and the good deeds that you teach your children to do that will convert those teachers as well.
Absolutely. Now, here's some things to think about. Is your light still working at school? Okay. And is it dim or strong? Is it consistent or not? And who's giving glory to God at your child's school because of your family? When last did you get a phone call from a teacher to say, I don't know what you're doing at home, but can I buy some of it? See, I believe that our teens, these awesome people right here, need to be different sort of teens at school because they're kingdom kids. Of course they need to be different. You know, I think sometimes what we do is we're like, well, I want them to be normal. They will never be normal. There's nothing normal about teens. They're too wonderful to be normal. There's not one teen here that wants to be normal. You hang out with them. They don't have normal ideas or normal dreams. They want to achieve great things, so let them not be normal. But certainly when it comes to obedience and growing in wisdom and stature, they should be very different children at their schools because of your influence. You know, it's not about being perfect. We don't have perfect families. Have you ever been in our home? Oh my gracious, on a Monday morning. Everything that can go wrong on a Monday morning goes wrong in the Muir household. And usually I'm a central part of that. It's just not Blacker. Here's a question. What does your child's teacher know about you without ever meeting you just because they observe your children? What picture have they formed of you as a parent just by seeing your child at school? I had to make a deal with my parents when I was a grade 4 teacher at Sundance Primary School. I won't believe half the things your children tell me happen in your home if you agree not to believe half the things that they tell you happen in my classroom. Because it was quite scary what was coming out of those children's mouths. Guess what happened at home? Especially after weekends. It was scary. Another thing to think about is, have you ever thought about being at school with Jesus? How many of you are 15? Is anyone 15 here? 15, okay. That's grade what? Grade 9, for some grade 10. For me it was grade 4 because I repeated often. And we don't laugh when people repeat. Come on. Now, imagine the guy sitting next to you. You walk into class and you walk in, Kai, and you say, hi, I'm Kai Worth. And the guy next to you says, hi, I'm Jesus Christ. You know, oh, really? Yeah, watch this. You see that dead fish? Fish is alive. Imagine being at school with Jesus Christ. Now, the thing we know is he went to school. He had teachers. But imagine being his friend at school. And when you're like, okay, I think I'm going to lie now. And Jesus would be like, don't even think that. What? Think that. You know, it must have been really challenging to be at school with him. But you know, the thing that we need to think about is that Jesus also had to learn to obey. He also had to grow. And so in many ways, we want to encourage our teens to be the very best example of Jesus they can be. Because that's just the right thing to do. But you see, it takes you parenting them in such a way that being like Jesus at school is attractive. Somebody
want to say on that? I think it's to think about for your own family is, are we the family that people want, that parents say, oh, why don't you have a play date with that person? Now, that would be really just weird for the teens, okay, working out play dates for your teens. I'm talking about the smaller kids. There's some children in my class where the parents don't want their kids in their house. Because they are just rough. They're all over the place. You know, and it's sad. It's sad for that child because there's no boundaries in their home. And that's what you've got to think of. How is your child when you're not around? You know, it's easy to say, well, I'm sure they're fine because they're fine when I'm there threatening them that if they do anything wrong, they're going to get a spanking. But what does your child do when you're not around? Are you teaching your child how to be socially acceptable in different surroundings, or are you just trying to keep control of your child every day so you can survive your child?
Okay, good point. Now, why does school matter? Well, let me just move over here to the teens. You're going to spend 18,000 hours at school. That's a long time. Now, parents, why is that important? Well, if we do a comparison for how many hours they're going to be at school, and how many hours the average parent will spend in decent conversation, the average says 20 minutes a day, over the same period that they'll be at school, 18,000 hours, you will only talk to them for 800 hours. 20 times more will they be at school than you'll have decent conversation time with your child. school is critically important. 18,000 hours, 800 hours. A lot can go wrong in those 18,000 hours, but also a lot can go right. And therefore, your relationship with the place that entertains your child for 18,000 hours needs to be a great relationship. Yeah. You need to know the teachers. You need to know what the school believes in, stands for. You need to feel like you are an investor in that school. That doesn't just mean pay school fees. You show up at events. You go to the pupil, parent, teacher, meet the teacher, meet and greet. That's important. You go seek the kingdom there. That's important. Because 18,000 hours of their lives, from grade R to grade 12, for me it was a little longer because standard 1, which is grade
3.
I was asked to stay back. I was so brilliant. They said, could you stay back just to make sure that that the rest of the school knows what a great job you did.
So what a great teacher. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, that's the story I was told. Stay back and help the teacher.
Okay.
Thank you. School needs to be your ally and friend. You know, I know that as parents, we are the champions and advocates of our children. And that's why I think as parents, we're good at what we do. Could we be better? Yes. Do we make mistakes? Absolutely. But we love these people. You know, when I speak to you about your teens, your children, you love them. You're like, oh, they did this and achieved this. And did you see Kai on the rugby field? Man, he just tackled everybody, including the ref. It's just great. I love that. You know, it's wonderful. I like when parents talk with great pride, in a good way, about their... But here's the problem. The problem is we can help our children, in a bad way, to become a bit self-centered, where it really becomes all about them. And that's why school is such a great thing, because suddenly they have to share their self-centeredness with 28 other pupils in a class. And that's a cool thing about school. It teaches our children to be less self-centered, where they realize that life does not end or start and end in their presence. That the sun doesn't only shine where they are. There are other children too. It's really a good thing and a lesson for them to learn. Next point. Everything I learned in life, I learned on the playground. Now, I don't know about you when you were at school. How many of you learned something quite interesting while you were on the playground at school? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And sometimes it's life lessons. And I'm going to read the first, and then Arena's going to read the next. The first is you need to play by the rules. You know, whatever it is, whether you're playing marbles or hockey or soccer or softball or kick each other's knees or whatever it is, you need to play by the rules. And the reason why is because you don't get invited back if you don't play by the rules. You need to be polite. You need to take turns. You need to share. You need to make friends. You need to tolerate differences of others. You need to consider people's feelings. Give everybody a chance. You need to get along, and you need to be humble. Yeah. That's important. Now, here's a question. How many of you played rugby at school? You played rugby. Don't be embarrassed. You played rugby. How many of you were ever in a situation where, you know, there was a friendly game, and they were choosing, and they didn't choose you? Or they said, oh, okay, we'll take you. How? Hey? Donnie, you and me, but okay, I know. Don, but let me just apologize on behalf of all those wretched friends. You're a great rugby player, but you are a better guitarist. You really are. And so these are important things that our children are going to be learning, and that's why you need to encourage them at school. You need to be part of what's happening because they're learning all these very important life lessons. Yeah.
Don't tear up the equipment. Put stuff back where you found it. Show sportsmanship. Shake hands. You know, question parents, sportsmanship. Just leave it there. Practice to get better at everything. Know the score. Remember, cheaters never really win. Winners never cheat. And never give up. Try your best always, in all ways.
Now, those last two sides, I know you're thinking, that's great for the children. Actually, they were for you as parents. Because I'll be honest, some of us as parents, we need to learn how to behave at school. We need to learn how to behave alongside the sports field. I have seen parents lose it completely. This guy called John Muir, I saw him. I tell you what, I saw John Muir at a swimming competition. This guy, John Muir. And you know you're over 50 when you speak about yourself in the third person. And this guy, John Muir, goes to watch his child, and then he forgets his children's names too, Emma, swim in a swimming race. And she came fourth. If she comes third, she gets an award or a bronze or something. And so what do? I yell at the top of my voice with my wife, Mrs. Muir, standing next to me, "Photo finish! I demand a photo finish!" Yeah. Now, those of you struggling with self-righteousness right now, I know you are saying, "I never do that." Mm-hmm. So what happened is, John Muir's wife, Mrs. Muir, said, "This is my school. I'm a teacher here. You cannot act like that. It's wrong.
You're embarrassing me now."
You're embarrassing. That's right. You're embarrassing me. And I just shut up. So I clearly was wrong. And so for us as parents, we need to learn these lessons of playing fair and behaving and having good manners at school, especially alongside the netball or the rugby. The biggest fights I've seen in sport have been disciples. I've seen sisters climb into each other on the netball field. Oh, my gracious. I wanted to call 911. I was scared. I've seen this other guy, John Muir, playing soccer for one of the Stellenbosch Rezzers, and Ivor Buerta having to rebuke his own minister, lead evangelist of the church, because John Muir was wanting to pick a fight on the soccer field. So listen, we're not beyond being out of line, out of touch. We need to play by the rules. Very important.
I think with the behavior of the parents, what we're seeing more and more at schools are that children's aggression, when you watch the parents in the parking lot, at the sport field, you immediately see why the children react the way they do. I mean, I have a little girl. She's one of my smallest little girls in my class. The other day, she just whacked one of the children. I was like, okay, that's out of character for her. But then I remember how her mom was telling me that she kicked one of the other mother's cars because she told her to stop, and she was scared that she didn't see her child behind the car. So what this mom does, who's also just like a tiny little thing, she went and kicked the car. I'm like, and your child saw that. You know, it's impulsive behavior that we're seeing more and more at schools that's becoming very worrying for teachers, because we don't just struggle with it with the children. We actually have to start talking to the parents about their behavior. And I want us to think about, as disciples, are we different? Or do we react quickly that our children see those things from us too?
Oh, great point. I mean, you know, I'll be honest. Being married to a teacher is really awesome, because you hear these great stories and you're like, seriously, that happened? Let's put that on Oprah or Dr. Phil or something. But scary. Now, let's go on to the D's. These stand for disastrous, disconnected, devilish, everything negative. Let's talk about the D's. Parents, please don't say this. When I was at school, yeah, that's like 400 years ago. Don't just hold. Teens, do your parents ever say that to you? Oh, sorry.
Doesn't help.
Okay. When I was at school, they don't care about when you were at school, because they're having to face those challenges. So don't tell them about when you were at school. When I was at school, there was no TV. There were no cell phones. You had to actually dial to get through to someone. In fact, some of you went to school where you actually round the phone up this way, and some auntie said, "No mas a blif." Okay, so don't do when I was at school. The other thing that we should be careful not to do as parents is dissing the teacher. And teens, you neither. You know, there's a great scripture that says you need to obey the authorities. Teachers are authorities. The Bible doesn't say obey them if you agree with them. No. You got to obey them. You know, sometimes parents, you can say something, you know, a little negative about the teacher. Yeah, I can't believe it. How are they supposed to go into class and be great examples when they know that you're dissing? That's just not right. Here's another thing parents should never do. Parents, please. Especially where you have children that have older siblings. Why can't you be more alike? That's very unfair. And it's actually quite soul-destroying. Because that's not who they are. They are their own person. Irina wants to talk about the next point.
I will fix it. You know, you get the parents that come in whatever situation their child is in. Like the helicopter mom, the child gets into a fight. What does the mom or the dad do? They phone the other parents and try and sort it out. Instead of letting the children sort it out themselves first. Now guide them. Let them talk to you. Give them good advice on what to do. And whack them is not the good advice. Okay? Even if everything in you feels like, well, maybe if this child just gets a good bop on the nose, you know, they'll stop bothering my child. But help them to see that they can maybe do something that will make a change in this child. And we've had it. I mean, there's been situations with Emma, there's a little girl that's an absolute little bully in their class. But we've had to help her to see that maybe she's just unhappy in her life and because of her life circumstances. And when she started looking at it, the one day she came back and she says, you know what, Mom? No matter how much she tries to please her mom never tells her that she did good. And she started feeling for the other child instead of just complaining about her the whole time. And I think when there's problems at school, you know, they left their sports bag behind or they left their lunchbox behind. Whoever you get in the car, quickly rush off to the school, put it down, no receptionist, you need to phone my daughter in her classroom, you know, tell her on the intercom, a lunch is here, my little darling, you know, she can't go without a lunch. Guess what? Let her go out of without lunch or him without lunch. They'll learn quickly. Don't forget it. You know, projects, things like that. If they don't get if they don't feel the repercussion, they'll continue just expecting to be given to.
Now, I know you guys don't necessarily like that, but
tough love.
but sometimes what we need to do, teens, is we need to train our parents.
Yep.
And if you allow your parents to do everything for you, when you're married and out of the house, they're going to be doing the same thing, and it's just embarrassing. Just embarrassing. So you need to take responsibility. If you don't get your homework done, it's not mom's fault. You need to own up, face the teacher. I want Irina to talk a little bit about achieving failed dreams through your child, because I think that's something that at times as parents can struggle with. There were things we wanted to do at school, and we didn't get it right, and so our children become...
Well, I think what we can do sometimes, and what we see a lot as well at schools, is that the parents want to live their dreams through their children. So I couldn't be the prima ballerina. So my little one who has flat feet and cannot jump with a pointy toe, she will do ballet. And I will rush her from one ballet lesson to another. Or the rugby player dad, who just didn't achieve what he wanted to achieve in rugby, takes his son who actually just wants to play the piano or maybe do ballet. And he will be the rugby player. You know, and you see these kids absolutely hating what they have to do. What is it, Reinhard? Okay. You'll have a beautiful, tall posture.
Yes.
But the thing is that a lot of times we can overwhelm our children with what we want to achieve. And we become so competitive as parents. We see that every single day, you know. This week, I was at a meeting at a private school, and I saw this little grade one child being rushed by her mom. And as she was walking, she was telling her daughter, like, no, 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 this is what you're going to do. And she was rattling off, and I felt overwhelmed. She was like, no, honey, Mondays, that's your ballet day. Tuesday is today, that's your tap dancing. Wednesday is your tennis day. Da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, and I thought, when does this child get time to play? You know, I thought, well, did the mom maybe want to be a tennis player or did she want to be a dancer? What is it? Because the child doesn't seem like she's enjoying any of it. She just seems like, okay, here I go. You know, where do I need to go next? But we've got to think about it because sometimes it's just because we become competitive. Something that we couldn't do or our parents maybe didn't have the means to allow us to do it. That we feel like, no, we need to get our children to do that too.
Okay, good point. 1969, when I was 5 years old, if I did badly at school, look what happened. Parents and teachers stood on one side of the desk and looked at me and said, "But what's up with you?" Now look what happens in today. Guess who's standing on what side and everybody's blaming the teacher. That somehow it's the teacher's fault that I don't know that 2 + 2 = 7. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Exactly, Leon. I mean, it's just
what's mess.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you've got to think about what are you communicating to your child when it comes to failure. You know, I think we have failure all wrong. We think it's a bad thing. Will you ask any inventor, did you get it right the first time? No, I failed 1,000. But my failure was my greatest learning, because every time I failed differently until I got it right. You need to think about that. Now, you see that bulldozer? Irina's going to talk about parents who are a lot like that bulldozer.
Okay. Bulldozing. We have it in two different ways that we can look at it. We can look at bulldozing over your children, what they feel and think, and their abilities get bulldozed over because they will be a certain way. They will achieve, even though they will achieve 90% when they're actually just a 70%er. Or they will be the best at the sport when they actually can't play the sport or have no eye-hand coordination or something like that. But then you also get the bulldozer parent from a different perspective, that instead of preparing the child for the road, they prepare the road for the child. And they take out every obstacle and everything that can hurt their little darling child, and they move it away. They walk in front of their child instead of beside their child or behind their child and saying, you can do it. They do it. Okay, now the road is smooth and the path is very easy to walk. So now, my child, you can actually veer out into the world. And what we do is, a lot of times with that, is we take out every learning opportunity that our child has to form character. And then later on in years, we wonder, but why can't they make a decision? Why are they making bad decisions all of a sudden? You know, they used to be able to be fine. They did what we asked them to do, and they made the right decision. Yes, because you were going to spank them if they made the wrong decision. But as our children grow, we need to, I mean, a little one wanting to touch the plug, you clear that road and you pull them away and teach them that that's not a good thing. You know, whether it's a little spanking on the hand or whether it's pulling them away, you decide. But a child not being able to fail at school at anything or in anything in life, it doesn't really prepare them for life. You know, think of yourself, of all the lessons and the growth spurts that you have gone through. It was usually through something that you failed and you had to figure out how to get through it. Different character things in our lives as we became disciples. It was things that we saw we did wrong and we had to rethink and redo things, and we learned from it. And we need to do that for our children as well. Give them the opportunity to sometimes fail and say, you know what, if they are teens, if you've cleared every obstacle for them and they go to a party and they are offered drugs and cigarettes and alcohol, how are they going to argue with their friends that they don't want to do that if they were never able to argue a situation through with you? If they've just always had to be like, okay, mom said so, so yes, it's okay. Or dad said so, so I have to do it. We've got to converse with our children and make sure they understand and that they have the ability to actually disagree respectfully. I mean, we get a lot of times at schools, you know, we always laugh in staff meeting, general knowledge quiz. Okay, what is the one of the seven wonders, you know, and the one is Table Mountain. And the girl says, no, but I said table. No, it's Table Mountain. Yes, but I had half the answer. No, it is Table Mountain. Well, teacher, I just think you're wrong because I at least half the answer. You know, kids expect these days sometimes to get a mark just because they put their name on their papers. It's ridiculous. Nice. But that is how some of them are. And you can ask, especially the high school teachers that are around and the senior phase teachers. I mean, the things that they get argued with by the children, it's just, you stand there and you think, really? You think you can argue this point when I know that this is the answer? But they're going to try, you know. But what are you allowing your child to argue with you about to actually form character as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's just critical, is if you're going to take every obstacle away from your child, they'll never grow. And you will handicap them. And so we all, in some ways, fear a handicapped child. But that is the greatest handicap, is not allowing them the opportunity to learn. I think we've got to be very careful about not becoming MCF parents, my child first. MCF, my child first. Because your child will end up being last when it matters most for them not to be last. You know, the scripture says, he who's first shall be last. And I think we've got to be very careful that we're not indulging our children's every need and whim. And oftentimes, you know, they come back from school and say, well, Frank has an iPad. Well, I hope Frank enjoys his iPad.
Everyone.
You've got a writing pad. It's a wonderful thing. Use it.
Can I just say something, Johnny?
Yeah.
I think be aware, parents, that everyone becomes very much the saying of the children.
Yes.
But everyone has it. Start asking them who. And then all of a sudden you'll see it might be three out of the everyone that actually has it. Because it's just, for them at that moment, it feels like everyone has it. But the reality is that it might just be a handful.
Absolutely. Just a few things about what teachers want to say. Here's one. What teachers would like to say to you, we're on page 11 now. I've skipped to page 11. Teachers know when you're lying, parents. Not every dog eats the homework. That's not true. Dogs don't like paper that much. Miss, my dog ate the paper. That's a lie. That's not true. One of the things teachers want you to know is that sometimes they speak to you in what we call teacher ease, which means we ease the truth into you. So when a preschool teacher says, little Walter's still developing his ability to relate to other children, what she really means is, he's mean. You know, it's fascinating when Irina and I sit and she writes reports. She's sometimes in a really difficult position where some child she just wants to say, this child
is impossible.
That's right. But what happens is teachers learn that you as parents and us as parents, we get really defensive. So they try and come up with unique ways of saying the truth about your child, and that's not cool. Just Irina wants to quickly say something about enjoying your children.
I think just really making sure that you do enjoy your child. You know, you don't compare your child to another child in the sense of, oh, but look at how well this one is doing it. You know, every child develops at its own rate, and you've got to be able to give that child time to develop. And not feel pressure when they're not at that point. But if there are concerns, listen to the teacher. You might not see it. The teacher has 28 other children that she can compare that child with unemotionally. Where you do it emotionally. Unemotionally, she can compare those children. And she can see what is the normal trend for a child of that age. And what is maybe a little bit behind. Or where the child is advanced and they need more input. But let them play.
Yes. What teachers are worried about is that our children are too busy. Extra this, extra that. And they don't have time to play. And play is probably one of the most opportune times for learning. You know, you climb a tree and fall out. You learn about gravity. It's amazing. It's amazing. Let's finish off. I want to just close out talking about what matters. Sort of time's running out. And I'd like to convince your parents that the first point that I'm going to make about what really matters is critically important. And I want you to believe me, that you need to start rewarding effort and not excellence as parents. And let me tell you why it's important to reward effort. Because some children can be excellent without any effort. But one day that will catch up with them. One day it will catch up with them. Effort is critically important. There are also no stupid children. They're just sometimes misguided parents and teachers. Children are not stupid. What is a stupid child? I don't understand that. Now, we can do stupid things, and you know, and you may say, but you don't know what my teens get up to. Yes, I do. Some of these wonderful people have been in my class. I've seen what they can get up to. Look, Uncle John, we're hanging out the window. Buy nothing. Look! You know, okay. So their character report will always be the most important one. You need to make a big deal about their character report. Because a lot of very clever people have bad marriages and relationships. I don't want my child to be clever. I'd like my child to be wise, but I'd like my child to be of good character. We can skip that next one, and you need to build resilience. One of the things that Arena School's really big on, and the headmistress, is that we are creating wimpy children that give up too easily because we're not expecting them to be resilient. You need to also understand, parents, that you don't mistake a snapshot with the big picture of their lives. And so they come home from school and say, something terrible happened. And what we do is we take that, what terrible happened, and we say, well, that's what their whole life's going to be like. That's not true. We need to be alert and not alarmed. Sometimes we can be very alarmist as parents. I watch some of you parents, and I worry about you because you're stressed, because you get alarmed. Be alert, but don't be alarmed. We must ensure that we don't confuse wants and needs. Okay, that's important. The other thing is the marks on your child's report, so they come home with a report, is not a reflection on your worth as a parent. I got a double G for maths. Now, I was proud. Everyone else got one symbol. I got two. I was like, yeah, look at that, two. You silly boys, I got two. Until I realized that it calculated to 2%. And I was mortified. But my mother and my math teacher handled it very well. They put it into context. They said, you, my boy, are not a natural when it comes to maths. You're a friendly, out of yourself fellow, but not a natural. You need to learn to love the words trial and error. You need to understand, next slide. You want to talk about not making a team? Okay. When your child comes home from school and didn't make the team, that's awesome. Because it prepares them for adulthood. You're not going to get everything right as an adult. Sometimes you're not going to get your marriage right the first time. Or your own parenting right. And so failure is not an enemy. It can be an ally if managed correctly. Let me just say this about chores. These intelligent, very creative people on my left have learned four key words when you ask about chores. I have a test. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. And we bow down. We say, I'm sorry, can I bring you something? They need to do chores even when they have tests. They need to do chores even when they have tests. The other thing that we see, you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay, Irina wants to quickly talk about don't take it personally. Yeah. Oh my gracious.
I think as parents, we just need to always step back. When a teacher comes to you and say, this is the situation with your child or anything like that, take a moment, take a breather. Just like we have to do in discipleship when someone says, I see this in your character. You can't just go out and attack. Think of being a disciple. Be humble. You know, we had a situation just before I came home. One little girl had gone out of a classroom and shouted something really bad. And one of the moms actually sent an email to the principal and said that this is what the child did. And she just felt like she was very disrespectful. So my principal phoned the dad, and what was his first reaction? Oh, no, my child never says things like that. Well, yeah, maybe you haven't, but we wouldn't have phoned you if she didn't say it. You know, there's a reason why you're getting a phone call. There's a reason why your child's teacher calls you in. It's not because they think you're a bad person and a bad parent. It's they have your child's best interest on their hearts. They want to make sure that your child can achieve what they are able to achieve. So take that from that perspective. Make sure that you pull in the teacher into your life and say, what else can I do? You know, as disciples, just be a disciple. Think of a discipling time. You know, when I sit with some of my parents, I do feel like I'm the discipler and having to help them, advise them with parental advice and things like that. But it's so much easier doing that as a teacher when you actually get a parent's like, oh, man, that's really helpful, and see them put it into practice. But it's really frustrating as a teacher, too, when you give the advice and you tell them that there's something that they need to work on, and you see week after week, there's no communication with you. The child's just being left to their own devices. They're not getting any input. And then you start feeling like, well, that parent is not really on the same sheet of music as us. And the child is the one suffering. And that's what you've got to look at is, am I helping my child? Or am I actually damaging my child by not taking serious what they are seeing at school and in class with my child?
To close off, one of the challenges that I know parents face, and teens, you know, I'm sorry about this, but I'm just going to say it as it is sometimes your children are fussy about eating, fussy about what you pack them for. Have you ever experienced that? Okay. Can I tell you why they're fussy? Are you ready? It's mind-blowing. Because they've never been hungry before. You allow them to be hungry. Fussy goes right out the window. What matters in closing? That your light will shine at school. Your children's light will shine and your light will shine. That they will grow and become great adults one day. And that God will always be front and center, whether you're at school or at home or at church. And by your love, all men will know that you are disciples. And this is not about perfect parenting. This is about us as a collective saying, let's help each other. Because one day, like our desire for ourselves, we want these great people to go to heaven one day. And it's going to take us parenting, thinking orange, and giving glory to God. Amen.
Amen. Look, there's so much to take away from tonight. And so what we've actually provided are the notes on the handout. So if you feel like, man, you want to take something home and digest everything that you've learned, please.